Hello and welcome to episode 34 of Good Copy, Bad Copy. I'm Emily King, Ranx's content marketing manager.
Woo! Congratulations, Emily.
as of February. Today I'm joined by David Maguire, who recently became Ranx's creative director.
Hello!
So the last time you were on the podcast, you were still Lungfish, so now you're with us.
I know, it's nice to be, you know, let out of the Radix copywriting dungeons and allowed to see the daylight for a little while. It's certainly, it's been an intense couple of months.
Definitely. So in this episode, we're going to be discussing B2B ad copy, which was also the subject of a recent copy chat that we had over on Twitter and with varying results.
I'm still mesmerised by the GIFs from that copy chat. It was a beautiful thing.
So ad copy, for me, isn't something I actually have a great deal of experience with writing. I think I've only ever written maybe two pieces of it, and it was B2C.
Okay.
I've never touched it for B2B, but obviously I see a lot of B2B ads around because I'm reading material that's relevant to my job. But I just don't know much about their creation at all. So I'm really hoping you're going to be able to fill us in.
I'll try. I'll certainly try. I mean, I think it's something where there's probably not as much of that stuff goes on as there used to be. And the ads that there are, you know, people try and get a nice long lifespan out of them. So it's not a job that comes around particularly often for anybody that's a sector specialist, I think, but it's always a rare treat.
We've already mentioned B2C. Is there a way perhaps that B2B ads are considered less creative than B2C? And if this is the case, why might that be?
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly is the perception. I don't know if it's just because you see more B2C ads, you just happen to remember the good ones.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of, you know, there are a lot of bad B2C ads around as well. But certainly, you know, when you try to think of the B2B ads that you really love, yeah, they're kind of few and far between, aren't they? And often when you go back and look at them, go, oh yeah, well, there's that really good one, you know, in The Economist, or, you know, there's that really good kind of Ogilvy, you know, old school Ogilvy stuff about how to do an ad campaign that works. A lot of the time you then say, hang on, no, this is B2B adverts about B2B advertising. And I think sometimes that you kind of get that when the advertising is for advertising, people try to show what the medium can do. And so that's kind of where B2B is let off the leash a bit. And we know where you get these really great, like the old Rolling Stone ads, the perception reality adverts for, you know, two advertisers, two businesses about advertising in Rolling Stone. And so you think that maybe that's what happens. You get that good stuff when people are less worried about the client. So I think that it's something where people are maybe less used to producing ads in B2B. It may be something that, because there's often a longer sales cycle with the sales department very actively involved, it's something where, you know, it's very leads focused, you know, or something, you know, it could change the creative process that way a bit.
I mean, a lot of the B2B ads that I have seen, when I have seen them, they just feel really slotted together by the numbers. Here's some art, here's some copy, but there's no real soul to them in comparison to some of the, like, maybe like the odd long copy ad you might see for some B2C brand.
Yeah, there's no big idea, is there? Yeah. I think that's the thing. There are a few exceptions, but a lot of the time when B2B has a big idea, video is what they'll do. So you get the, you know, you get the Epic Split, you get, you know, you get the Sophos Zombies ad or something. You know, and often the big idea goes off and hides in a video somewhere rather than a display ad, which is a pity.
But have B2B ads actually changed over time, or are they still pretty much the same today as they were 10 years ago?
How dare you insinuate that I'm that old? Let me phone someone that's not young and sprightly like I clearly am. I don't know. I think that maybe they are. The one change I think is that they are more full of jargon than they used to be, and not. They used to be full of industry jargon for the industry that you worked in, and that was probably fine, because if you're talking to air conditioning engineers, you want to talk about F-gas regulations, and if you're talking to forklift truck managers, you want to talk about Lola and Pua and all of these things. You know, and similarly with, you know, in tech markets where you talk about storage or the stack or all of this stuff. And that's all fine. I think the problem that you get is that marketing managers are kind of infiltrating the copy process. And so you often see a lot of the kind of language that you see in marketing management discussions about, oh, engage with this or reach out to that. And all, you know, all of these kind of buzzword things, they begin to come through into ad copy. Because it's the people in that room imagining that everyone outside that room talks like them. That's something I've noticed more recently. There's a brilliant blog post about it, actually, on Pro Copywriters. Ryan Warman did one. So, that was...
We will link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, wicked, do that.
I suppose one thing I've been thinking about, because... ads are very different to content marketing. Obviously, I'm heavily involved in content marketing. There's no doubt about that. But obviously, when you get trade magazines or sort of like industry magazines, and obviously that's where some ads might crop up, like you open up B2B Marketing Magazine,
mm-hmm.
and you've got ads for, I don't know, some social media analytics platform
or
something. But there aren't as many of those sort of magazines necessarily around today as there used to be in some places. So has that perhaps affected kind of like the ability to create, because there's actually less places where they might go, at least outside of online?
Maybe. I think there's certainly been some consolidation in the trade ad market. A lot of things are going digital, and digital advertising is an entirely different thing that still happens. But I've got to say, I mean, you still can find trade publications for any trade that you think about. I sometimes spend, you know, my life, it feels, writing copy for the kinds of ad that turn up, for the kind of magazine that turns up as the guest publication on Have I Got News For You? Because there are, you know, I mean, we'll talk about air conditioning, there's ACR Today and ACR News and RAC Engineer and all of these things, or you've got, you know, Eureka and Design Solutions and PECW Magazine and Handling Storage Solutions. You know, they're all there because they all serve a purpose, and they've got a key market, which makes them very, very targeted. It gives you a very clear idea of who you're writing for. Which is, you know, you would think would help you to create good ad copy. And sometimes that happens.
So what are the most common mistakes that people sort of run into with B2B ad copy?
I think the biggest thing with any ad copy is that when a client is paid their £1,000 for a page in a magazine or whatever it is, they want to say everything. You know, they want, oh yeah, can you do this? Can you do that? You know, can you talk about the features? Can you talk about the benefits? Can you talk about this? Can you talk about the price? Can you talk about the after sales? You know, can you offer them a piece of content to come back to? And they want to be everything to everyone and get every possible sales argument they can into that ad. So you're throwing a bunch of stuff at somebody and they're not going to catch anything. Well, when you think of an ad that is really effective, what they've done is they've gone, right, what's the one idea that we want this prospect to get? You know, this person in our market, we want them to learn one thing about our product. And they, you know, if you can do that and do it in a really engaging way, they might just remember it. So trying to do too much, and that's whether it's trying to say too much, you know, include too much information, too many different ideas, or whether they want the ad to achieve too much, you know, whether you want, you know, we all know about, you know, the sales metaphor, you know, the sales funnel metaphor and things. We all know about that. You know, and we think, you know, in content marketing, classically, where is someone on their sales journey, their buying journey, when they see this piece of content? Mm. And in content marketing, we get that.
Yeah.
And then you go to write an ad and people forget it. And people are like, ah, here's someone that has never heard from us, and we're going to take them all the way through to buying something in the space of an 80-word advert.
Mm.
It just ain't going
to
happen.
No, it's not. So obviously then what's the key to writing a really, really good B2B ad with the copy? What's key to doing that?
Focus.
It's definitely focus.
Focus, absolutely. You know, focus on one key, you know, hold one key target audience member. You know, who are you writing for? Hold the person in your mind. What do you want them to know? How can you explain that to them in a way that stands out and they'll remember? And what do you want them to do as a result of it? You know, one, you know, and it needs to all fit, you know, one person, one idea, one action. Focus. You know, anything else is a benefit. You know, presenting that in an engaging way that demonstrates something about your brand is important too. But it is, you know, it's that clarity. That's where the really great ideas come from.
Is it also perhaps that with the call to action, that obviously just making sure it's sort of like once, so either like phone us or visit our website, but would you do both? Or would you always just make sure you've got that kind of link to your online presence in the ad?
I don't know if anybody checks out a website as a result of seeing the of seeing a magazine, but it's possible. I think the thing about call to action is that's assuming there's going to be action. You know, that's already, you know, it. Yeah, you probably want to include that for the few people that maybe want to get in touch or maybe want to find out more. But in the olden days, they
didn't have that.
The olden days, before my time, obviously, they used to be coupons.
Mm.
And what you'd get in a trade mag, they would have, quite literally, they'd have a coupon with a list of all the advertisers in that month's magazine. And you'd fill it in and you'd send it off and you'd hear from those people. And that's okay. How it used to work. And it was measurable. And because of that, you know, marketing people can see exactly how many leads they've had from that advert. It was that one-to-one thing that digital should really do for us now, but people have made it complicated.
I suppose part of it, if you were going to include a website address at all, you would just have to make sure that the address is specific for that ad campaign.
Yeah, kind of. But the longer you make it, the harder it is for anyone to remember it, unless they've got it in front
you'd
of it.
You'd have to use a link shortener. It'd have to be a link shortened one, or it's clearly your brand name and it's to a particular landing page associated with that campaign.
Yeah, so I think what will happen if a magazine ad drives someone online, I think the number of people are going to have that magazine ad in front of them, and tap, 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 copy it across into their browser, you know, URL bar, you know, the address bar, is going to be the number of people that's going to, that's bit.ly or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be vanishingly small. You know, more likely, if someone likes the idea of something, you know, of what you're talking about, and wants to follow it up, they're probably just going to Google your company name.
Which then means you need to make sure that your website's easily searchable.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's really hard to track. And again, it's that thing about being clear what the, you know, what the action is and what you want out of it. A lot of the time with ad copy now, you know, in the past, it used to be, you'd have this coupon, you'd fill it out, you'd hear from the company that you were interested in, and that would be a lead, and you'd go off and do a little sales thing. But now, as we all know, in the age of the internet and content marketing, you do all your research before you want to get involved with that company at all.
Mm.
So lead attribution becomes that much harder, but equally, it might not be the most relevant thing to measure anymore, because if you're in that really early stage, where no one's even heard of, you know, the reader hasn't even heard of
it's
your company.
It's just that brand awareness that you want.
It's that kind of really high level air cover stuff
yeah.
that's sort of important, but some of it's wasted and marketers kind of hate it because it's just so nebulous and, and hard to track. You know, that it's kind of, is it working? Is it not? You kind of, you take the temperature and, you know, and the testing, you know, hats off to the people that do the testing and the analysis of that stuff, because you kind of, you got to kind of track awareness over time, or you somehow take the temperature of when your salesperson is talking to someone, how many people act like they've heard of you. You know, it's a desperately difficult thing, but it might be that your ad is at that part of the buying journey, or it might be, you know, later. It could be that you're a brand in your market that everybody's heard of, and the ad is that thing you wanted that you know about, and you already know why it's brilliant. They're half price right now, but only for this month. Boom. Mm. You know, completely different kind of ad, and you track it in a completely different way because it's a different part of the buying process.
So we've kind of touched it a little bit, but does design become come before copy, or does copy come before design, or ideally should the two be entwined together in harmony?
That would be beautiful. The you know, in the in an ideal world, and where you'll often see the best ads, you know, I mean, the classic ad thing is that you've got the art director and you've got the copywriter, and they work together, and you get this kind of gestalt third person that's bigger and better than either of them. And, you know, and between them, you know, the copy and the design are communicating one thing. And the effect is multiplied. That's the classic thing. In practice, in this day and age, I virtually never see it. You know, it's so vanishingly rare that happens. So what you then need is for somebody to have a really good idea, and some, you know, that includes a concept. You know, what the idea is, what we're going to communicate, how we're going to grab people's attention. And so either the designer has a big idea and briefs the copywriter, or the copywriter has a big idea and briefs the designer for, okay, here's the word, and this is how this is going to look. Or a third person briefs the two of them.
Yeah.
But somebody needs to have a really clear vision of how the words and the design are going to work together. What you don't want is the second worst thing you can have is, here are my words. Copywriter goes away, writes some words with no idea of what they're going to look like on the page, and they give them to a designer to make them look pretty. There you are, interpret that. You know. And then the worst thing ever is the other way around. The designer designs something pretty, puts a space in it for some words, and gives that to a copywriter. You know, you're just never going to get a great ad that way. Someone's got to have, ideally, two people together, but somebody's got to have a clear vision for what the ad's going to be.
But yeah, we just don't get that happening so much these days. Like I said earlier, a lot of ads that I do see, when I do bother to look at them, they just look slotted together, and sometimes the so much stock photos and just the imagery doesn't fit the copy or the copy. Yeah.
Yeah, because the thing is that stock photos are so tempting because compared to actually doing it properly, they're so cheap.
Yep.
You know, and it puts the price of the ad, you know, way, way up, when people are going to, you know, be more sparing generally these days in how much display advertising they buy. So they want to get, you know, if you're only going to run something 4 times during the year or something, what good are you going to get out of that? But, you know, it's harder to invest in doing, you know, yeah, let's go and do a photo shoot to get that one photo that we want for this idea. It's a it's a bit more difficult. Are you gonna name and shame ads that you know ads that don't hang together in the show notes, or is that not fair?
I don't think I can, but it's just almost every
we've
ad,
all seen them.
Yeah, I in some ways I'd rather just have like just your company colour, your logo somewhere, and the text than some of the stock photos I've seen. It gets that bad.
Stock photos are beautiful things, aren't they?
Oh.
some of them are great. I like the Tumblr sites you get. I suppose we could put some stuff in the show notes about like good adverts and stuff.
Try to find some.
Yes.
So we haven't mentioned length exactly, but is there any way to say like what the ideal length for copy is? Does it depend obviously on the space? One would hope you would know how much space.
Oh God, you've got. Yeah, yeah. If if you don't know how big the ad's going to be, you're in trouble right from the start. And the other thing's an interesting question. Do you need to know where the ad's going to appear?
Yeah.
Because that really helps. You know, everyone's like, do you have to know? It's like, well, no, you don't have to, but it really helps. If I can sit down with a copy of the magazine where the thing's going to appear and go, what's going to look like it makes sense here, but still really stand out and catch your imagination? What's going to grab the attention? There's a thing, it's like I did a thing for Credit Management Journal. You know, and I sat down and I kind of thought, well, what headline is going to really grab someone's attention here if you're a credit manager? What's going to actually make you stop and read? You know, anyway, sorry, I've wandered off the question, which is about how long does an ad have to be? As long as it needs to be to tell the story, really. I mean, you can get literally, you know, what's it for? You can get away with 4 words. You can get away with 400 words, you know. Generally speaking, I tend to find the nice kind of middle of the road ad where you're telling a story about a particular thing. I tend to find they get a nice sense of completeness at about 100 words, maybe 80. And I look at it and think, I couldn't do that any better. Then I come back to it a year later and spot the 30 words that I didn't need after all. Yeah, I didn't need that whole paragraph. It would have been better without that. I don't know. It's probably just my, you know, that's what I'm projecting onto it. But it feels like, you know, I often get a feeling of, oh yeah, I've told that story really nicely in, kind of 80 to 110. It ends up, a lot of the ad copy that I write ends up being about that length. But equally, some of the really classic Ogilvy stuff is an entire page of text, you know, and virtually no pictures. You know, and then, but equally, if it's something that wants to make one very succinct point about a brand, and you don't have to do a lot of introduction stuff, it could be one sentence on a page.
Is there any differences that you think you should mention between digital and print ads for people right here and now? Can you tell it's display ads?
Yeah, display ads, just digital display versus print display. I mean, the thing about digital display is that a lot of times just the space is so tiny and the shapes are so weird. The number of times I found myself tempted just to say to a designer, can we just write it sideways? Can we just make people turn their heads sideways to read this? Because it's going to be some crazy skyscraper shape and things. And so the attention span is shorter, the space is smaller, the wording should be shorter, you know, 2 words or whatever, you know, just, you know, really short, you know, quite a lot of impact. Again, very clear, you know, how important is it to provoke a click, or how much is this just air cover, you know, brand awareness? Again, you know, what's the context? And again, it should be the number of things you can do in digital media and digital formats and all the clever stuff you can do. It should be a space where you can get really stupidly creative. I should be left with my jaw just, you know, I should be seeing jaw-dropping digital stuff that makes me go, oh God, that's clever, on a daily basis. And I just don't. You know, it's just, oh God, that's annoying. You know, can I get back to reading the thing I wanted to read now, Mr. Nasty Interstitial? Thank you.
Or also playing videos that happen to have some copy above them and below them.
Yeah, playing videos without asking you if you wanted to play the video, and making loads of sound come out without asking you if you wanted the sound.
I suppose in some ways, actually, display ads in print are a far more sort of voluntary form of advertising. Yeah. They don't try to assault you and your senses.
Yeah, you know, and if you get a good one, you can get someone to read a 400-word print ad. You can't get someone to read a 400-word banner ad.
Nope.
Oh, my God.
Do you actually have any favourite B2B adverts or...
What ones that I've done or other people's ones?
Either, I think, at this point.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've kind of alluded to some of them already, I think, you know, but, you know, the really classic, you know, there's this, you know, classic old Ogilvy one about how to create industrial advertising that sells. It's like, how mad is that? How specific is that? And it's like, it's got no big header image. It's just a page of text with some examples on it. You know, but it's just that instructional. It's content marketing before content marketing. I've no idea when they did that ad, but I'm guessing it's late 50s, early 60s probably. You know, and you kind of think, how crazy is that? But it's offering something of value, making people want to stop and read, and... in the context, kind of going, well, this is the stuff that we gave you for free. We were prepared to tell you and all our competitors this much. How much do you think we really know? So, you know, are they going to be on your shortlist? Definitely. You know, if you're that person, you know, and it's that, and they did it for, you know, like, so they did an industrial advertising one and a consumer advertising one, you know, and so they were talking so specifically to their target markets and offering them all specific advice. And I really loved that. Personally, there were a few that I think worked. I mean, the one that we did, the credit management one, I thought was really nice because it kind of answered the brief as far as repositioning the brand and getting people's attention in a really simple way. Ones that have answered the brief. So there was one that we did for advanced engineering. Shared it in the copy chat on Twitter. But there's one that I did years and years ago, where the point was that you had to make people feel good and comfortable about a new product being launched in the UK because it had this much American engineering heritage, and they were going up against cheap Chinese imports. You know, and what you can't say is buy this because it ain't Chinese.
Well, no.
Because how just xenophobic and horrible is that? You know, but you wanted to kind of play up the heritage and the positive side of the tried and tested nature of these sorts. And so there's the whole, kind of American authentic blue collar experiencing that we needed to tap into and to introduce the company in the UK. We did that in a kind of fun way. So yeah, that's one that sticks out for me as a highlight that was fun to work on.
Unfortunately, all my favourite B2B ads are video-based. None of them are...
yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, that's where all the big ideas... So which ones are for you?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the ads that Adobe Marketing Cloud have done for their product. Like... Mean Streets, which was about a guy buying clicks.
I love that. Yeah.
There were two or three versions of that, and then they had the one with the baby that kept buying a encyclopedia that made a company think that some of the encyclopedias that were printed were back in fashion or something. And I think they've done a couple of more recently that I haven't caught up with, but I really like those ads. And obviously the Sophos zombie apocalypse one is just... So and it's right because it looks at its knows its audience is going to be probably quite geeky, the kind of, you know, system admins who are like, yes, I identify with that.
Make the system admin the tragic, you know, hero of a zombie movie and relate it to their. I mean, it's so perfect, isn't it? And the interesting thing is what you like about those is kind of the same thing that makes a print ad good.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things, all of those ads that you just mentioned, and I agree, they're all brilliant, are focused on one idea, one benefit of the product, expressing it to a very clear market in a very focused and memorable way. You know, they deliver one message very clearly. Each of those ads, which is what people do in any great advertising. You know, it would be nice to see more of that stuff in that kind of creativity in print.
Well, that's all we've got time for in this episode of Good Copy, Bad Copy.
Already?
Yeah. You can follow Radix on Twitter at radix.com, and you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can also sign up for a monthly e-newsletter for latest copywriting tips and insights. Also, the next B2B copy chat happening at the beginning of March. We'll have more details on our website soon. That will be about the 7 types of copywriter.
7?
And we'll probably include quizzes and people telling us what kind of copywriter they are.
Will there be gifts of pandas?
I keep being asked for gifts of pandas. I keep thinking about it.
Oh, that's amazing.